Minnesota Reads is produced at KUMD with funding provided in part by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Good morning and welcome to Minnesota Reads. Our guest this morning is Jack L. High. He's an author of the book called The Lost Brothers. Jack, thanks so much for joining us this morning. It's great to have you with us.
It's my pleasure to be here with you.
And Jack, I did warn you. When I closed the book yesterday, I said that is the most horrible book ever. And then I amended it quickly to it's the most horrible story ever. Can you summarize it just briefly
sure.
for folks so they know what has upset me so desperately?
Well, it's unquestionably a devastating story. The Lost Brothers is about an incident in 1951 when three little boys, brothers, who were 8, 6, and 4 years old, went out on a Saturday afternoon, left home to play in their neighborhood park a few blocks away in their North Minneapolis neighborhood, and were never seen again. And so part of the book covers what happened on that day and in the days following in 1951. The police investigated the disappearance. They never treated it as a crime or a possible crime. They were focused on looking at the boys as missing people or possibly runaways, and amazingly closed the case in 5 days, concluding that the boys had drowned in the Mississippi River about a mile away from their home. There's very little evidence to support this conclusion. No bodies ever found in the river. And so the family didn't accept that conclusion, and mom and dad, for the rest of their lives, kept looking. So that's part of the story. There's also a contemporary aspect of the story, an undercurrent, which is about how the family has endured all this over all these decades. It's now 68 years since the Klein brothers disappeared. And it's also about a contemporary investigation of the missing brothers that's been done by two Wright County, Minnesota sheriff's deputies on their own time, who have made a lot of progress, gotten much further than the Minneapolis police did back in 1951. So it's a multi-layered kind of story.
There are so many, many questions that we come up with, of course, as contemporary people who live in the society in which we live. And the astonishing changes in the way not just the way that forensic science has advanced and the things that we can find out now that, of course, people didn't have access to at that point, but just the things that we are afraid of, the horrible conclusions that we jump to and we're so often right. This book begs a million questions. My first question as I was reading it was the conclusion of death by drowning. Was that more, do you feel, the result of bad policing or sloppy policing, or just they investigated this to the limit of the forensic capabilities that they had at the time?
Yeah, I think it was not just the limits of forensic capabilities, but societal assumptions. It just did not enter people's mind back then that boys, three boys together, could have been abducted, kidnapped, or worse. I would never say that bad policing was in operation here. I think the police investigators of the time were doing the best they could, the best they knew how, but abductions weren't on the minds of people back then. And in fact, the mother of the boys, Betty Klein, it did not occur to her as a possibility until weeks after the boys disappeared. So it's important, I think, to put yourself in the context of the times. Today, abduction would be thought of right away. Suspects would be looked at, all of that. But it just wasn't happening back then. And you're absolutely right. We have a different society today, and the methods of police investigation are very different, too.
Now, there had been a few years prior, there had been a famous abduction. The Lindbergh baby had been kidnapped. Then, of course, 51 to 80, what was it, 89, when Jacob Wetterling disappeared. So the renewed interest in the case and taking a second look at the facts did kind of intersect the Wetterling, the time frame of the Wetterling kidnapping. And I was wondering, as you read about the parents and you read about the family and how that family struggled to put itself back together and to go on, if there is a lesson from the case that you never give up, or, but of course, around them, everybody, all of the people around them were, you know, saying at some point you have to move on, you have to move on. Should we take from this that if you lose somebody out of your family without any kind of knowing what happened to them, that you can't, it doesn't work that way?
Well, I think the lesson in this case, you know, all families are different. In the case of the Klein family, they were strong. They were a very strong family. And I think having this terrible tragedy occur in a way made them stronger. After the three brothers disappeared, the Kleins had four more sons. They were all, even though they never met these missing boys, they were all involved later in their lives as they grew up in different aspects of the search. And I first met Betty and Kenneth Klein, the parents, in 1998. And I didn't know what to expect when I first met them, what their emotional state would be, what their mood would be like. They were upbeat, strong, confident people, determined as well, but kind and warm. And I don't think this event damaged them. I think it just made them more of who they were. And that's one of the lessons of this whole story, this whole case, that if something terrible like this happens in your family, tap into what you're strongest in, and it might carry you through. It doesn't happen in all families, but it did happen in this case.
The investigation was opened. Some contemporary police officers in the 90s started to hear about the story, and already, even those many years later, 40 years later, realized that there had been a lot of advances, felt that there were a lot of things that could have been done, that should have been done, that weren't done. Talk a little bit, because I think this is very much on the forefront of our minds, and I think we're already seeing it, where our forensic technologies have advanced to a point that some of these cold cases or old unsolved cases are being looked at again, and we're saying, hey, we've got some new investigative tools, we've got, you know, some new things to bring to take a second look at this. Talk about some of the challenges that these officers faced as they tried to reopen a 60-year-old cold case.
The biggest challenge in this case is the lack of evidence of any kind. There were two of the boys' caps were found on top of the ice in the Mississippi River a few days after they disappeared, and that was the only physical evidence that came out that emerged in this case. So in a case like this, looking at it 40 years later, now 68 years later, it means that you have to look back at the people and look at what the police originally looked at back in 1951 and try and think of it differently. Try and take a fresh view, have a fresh take on it. But these kinds of cases, they're cold for a reason, and it's because they were unsolvable originally, and they're still very difficult to solve. But there is technology that can help. In this case of the missing Klein brothers, two men decades later came forward and said they thought they might be perhaps the missing brothers because they had grown up not really knowing what their family origins were, and they very loosely fit the physical type of But DNA testing showed that it could not be. They weren't a match. So at least in this case, the technology was able to exclude a possibility. But the people who are attracted to solving cases like this, like the police officer you mentioned in the 1990s, his name is Jim Schultz. He's now a retired Minneapolis Park police officer. And the two Wright County sheriff's deputies who are currently looking at the case, Jessica Miller and Lance Saltz, they are a special kind of people. They're patient, and they're thorough, and they're not rushing. They're not looking for instant answers. They're just looking to edge things forward a little bit ahead so that maybe the next people who undertake this will be in a better position than they were.
Let me ask you one final question. They were doing an unofficial investigation. There are obviously a lot of rules about official investigations into a crime, into a cold case, what has to be done and who has to open up a cold case.
Right.
And so not only were they were being very respectful and making sure that kind of everybody was in the loop and knew what they were doing, but they were running an unofficial investigation. And then finally, the family realized that this couldn't go any further without money. No police department had the money to send, to throw it at a 60-year-old cold case. And so the only option would be to crowdfund an investigation. Again, with the advances in some of the technologies, in some ways we could be closer to answers in some cold cases that are sitting there now. And yet, what do you see as possible legal or ethical or moral complications with unofficial investigations and crowdfunding investigations and kind of moving that whole thing out of the police and detective and criminal bureau purview into civilian?
Yeah. One real complication in this case is that the police, as I said, closed it in 1951 with no conclusion that any crime had occurred. And so case is closed. Minneapolis police are no longer involved. It's an orphaned case. There's no police agency that either has jurisdiction or wants to assume jurisdiction anymore for carrying this forward. Crowdfunding is a possibility, but one of the reasons why I wrote The Lost Brothers was to help the Klein family and maybe flush out some information that people have, some memories, things they heard second or even third hand that could help us figure out what happened to the missing boys. There's, you hear a lot in cases like this about closure and resolution, and I don't think that's really possible when such a devastating thing has happened in a family. But one thing that we can achieve is certainty, to know exactly what happened to the boys. So I'm hoping that people will come forward if they know anything at all or think they know anything at all, they can contact me through my website, el-hai.com. And I've already had a few things come in that are valuable, and we'll see what happens.
Jack, we'll get the link set up on our website also, so if folks do have anything to contribute, they will know how to do it. It is an incredible read. It is devastating, but it is an incredible read. And thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. My pleasure to be here.
Jack L. High is the author of a book called The Lost Brothers. He joined us this morning as our guest on Minnesota Reads. Minnesota Reads on KUMD is produced with funding provided in part by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.